This is Generation Justice.
50 years ago, the world was in racial turmoil, and young people led the way to create much-needed change. What has changed, and what has remained the same? Cecilia Fresca traveled to Jackson, Mississippi, to talk with people who were commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Summer.
50 years ago, there was an incredible amount of hope and belief that if we got together, we could really change things.
Also tonight, Lucia Martinez explores the question, what does it mean to be Chicano, Chicana?
I am Chicano.
I am Chicana.
I'm Chicano.
Welcome to Generation Justice, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico, 89.9 KUNM and KUNM.org. I'm your host, Carson Lafferty.
And I'm your other host, Nicole Beatty. Generation Justice is a multimedia project training youth to create media that inspires social change. We also have a dynamic calendar with many events happening soon.
This past summer, in collaboration with the New World Foundation and the Civic Opportunities Initiative Network, or COIN, Generation Justice members Cecilia Frescas and Lucia Martinez produced in-depth media projects.
Tonight we will feature their very important and educational work. But first, let's have our music host, Alma Olavarria Gallegos, with tunes.
Hello, hello. I'm Alma Olavarria Gallegos, and today we have some awesome music for you guys. This first song is by an all-woman African-American a cappella group called Sweet Honey in the Rock. This song is called Ella's Song, after Ella Baker. For those of you who don't know, Ella Baker was an amazing civil rights activist and is often considered one of the most influential African-American leaders. Along with many other youth organizing projects, Ella Baker helped start the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which helped create Freedom Summer. Let's hear Ella's Song by Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Believe in freedom, and I live. Hear me talking to ya. We here believe in freedom, and I'll raise from town. And struggling myself don't mean a whole lot. I've come to realize that teaching others to stand up and fight
is the only. Cecilia Frescas participated in the 50th anniversary conference of the Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964. During a taxi ride in Jackson, Mississippi, Cecilia had an unexpected but enlightening conversation with the driver, Melinda Blair.
Cecilia shares with us some of her experiences from the conference and what she learned along the way.
This June, I actually had the opportunity to attend the Freedom Summer 50th Anniversary Conference in Jackson, Mississippi. I went with Latino Justice, which is an organization in New York City that I had been working with. And at the time, I wasn't entirely sure what Freedom Summer was. In fact, I didn't know much about the civil rights movement in general. The small amount of knowledge that I did have on the civil rights movement came from textbooks in high school and some other things that I had learned through my time organizing. But overall, my knowledge was pretty limited. More than anything, I had always seen the civil rights movement as existing in its own time and space. I hadn't paid much attention to the connections that exist between the movement then and the movement now. As I spent those days at the conference, I learned a lot about Freedom Summer, the civil rights movement, and the history of Jackson, Mississippi. This was especially true as I arrived into the city itself. When I took the taxi to my hotel, I had a very open conversation with the taxi driver. I shared what I knew about Freedom Summer in 1964, and he was very interested in what I was saying. It wasn't until the end of my trip that he told me that he had actually been present in Mississippi during that time. This came as a surprise to me because he hadn't mentioned anything earlier, but it was very eye-opening to hear. Not only did this interaction help me realize how many stories this city held, but it also helped me realize that there were different levels of involvement. For instance, there were nationally recruited volunteers, the local organizers, and the non-organizing community members who were impacted. This was not the only interaction I had with community members. In fact, there were other informal conversations that I had with people who lived in Mississippi during the 60s and who shared their experiences with me. These are often voices that we don't get to hear from because they weren't at the forefront, yet their perspectives offer a more well-rounded understanding of this time period. One community member I spoke with, Melinda Blair, told me of her experience as a part of the first cohort of students who desegregated schools. She actually had to be escorted into school by police officers, but as soon as they would leave, she was bullied by the white students. Yet, Melinda shared how her mother taught her not to fight violence with violence, but rather to stay calm and fight violence with the Lord. As I was at the Freedom Summer 50th Anniversary Conference in Tougaloo College, one particular building struck me. I soon learned that this building had actually been a plantation owner's home. When I learned this, I looked around the landscape and the space I was in, and everything once again became very real. All the history of slavery, segregation, violence, and racism emerged. It was very overwhelming to realize the history of this space, but recognizing that I was there to celebrate the 50th anniversary of a movement with organizers from across the nation, I was able to see that change does happen. And perhaps we don't get to see the change immediately, but we must remember that change is not always meant for our eyes to see, but rather for future generations to experience.
My name is Melinda Blair. I was named after the midwife that delivered me in my mama's kitchen, because my mama didn't have a bedroom. Her kids slept in the one bedroom, and it was 15 of us, and I'm the baby. But me being the youngest, all my brothers and sisters insisted that I go to school, and they would make me read from the time I was 3 years old, so I developed a hunger for education. In order to go to school, I had to take a test. I didn't want to pass the test because that would separate me from all my friends and my family and make me go to an all-white school, and the white folks hated us. It was simple as that. But I passed the test, and I was the one out of the over 500 kids in Rosedale, Mississippi, that went to an all-white school. The police would come to my house in the morning, and they would have to walk me into the school, and as soon as they leave, they would still ridicule me and mess with me and push me down. And my mom would dress me in cute little frilly dresses and cute little frilly socks and tie my hair up in bows, and they would spit on me and beat me and push me down in the mud and mess up my clothes. And when my mom would come to the school and say something, they would do the same thing to her. That was the hardest part, watching my mom, such a strong woman, have to back up from confrontation because she never taught us to fight. She's always fight with the Lord. So we ended up moving all together. We moved to Canton. I graduated high school with honors, and then I went to Jackson State, and I have my master's in business administration. But my mom was one of the first people that was transported to Jackson for the in the Freedom Ride to vote. But my mom was half white, so they had to take a black homemade hoodie and put it over her head until she was out of Bolivar County. And once she was out of Bolivar County, they would take it off because she was very fair, light-skinned, and they know that they would mess with them in the car if they saw an almost white woman riding with them. So I am very much so the power of voting. I don't miss a vote, neither do my sisters and brothers that's alive now. My mom's in heaven, God bless her soul. But in turn, she taught me to be the woman that I am today. And for that, I am truly proud.
We've just heard the voices of Cecilia Frescas reflecting on her time at the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Summer Conference, and Melinda Blair discussing her experiences as a Mississippi resident who lived through the tumultuous time of the Freedom Summer of 1964.
What struck me most about Melinda's story was that she was one of the first African-American females in Mississippi to be integrated in an all-white public school. Thank you, Melinda, for that inspirational story.
While Cecilia was at the Freedom Summer Conference, she gathered many different voices from the people who attended.
What follows is a collection of their stories.
Hi, my name is Gail Falk. My involvement in the civil rights movement in 1964 was I came here and I was assigned to be a Freedom School teacher.
My name is Richard C. Williams, and I am from Boulder, Colorado, and I was in the Freedom Summer Movement in 1964.
Hi, my name is Abbas. I'm with Youth Together, and I'm from Oakland, California.
I'm Rosie Mayers-Kirsch from Brandon, Mississippi, originally from Pulaski, Mississippi in Smith County, and I represent the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
My name is Kaya. I am from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I am here with Youth Together.
I'm here today for the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. We came down in buses 4 days worth of a trip to bring young people here just so that they can have some grounding and organizing.
I am here to learn about the power of my voice and the power of the voice of the youth.
Brings tears to my eyes when I think about Freedom Summer, when I think about the Freedom Schools that were set up to teach to read and write.
We had a large Freedom School. We had as many as 300 children signed up to come. The kids came every day full of enthusiasm.
I was called down there by the National Council of Churches, but that was part of a coordination of groups. First of all, there was SNCC, that was the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and then CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, and then COFO, which was more of a uniting one, was then the organization under which I worked here in Mississippi.
I wasn't old enough at that time to vote, but when I did become old enough to vote, I had no problem in registering, but two members in my family told me about being asked how many bubbles were there in a bar of soap at the Smith County Courthouse in Raleigh, Mississippi, how many grains of sand were there on the ocean shore. And it was things of that nature. You had to pay a poll tax, and then the poll tax was outlawed, and after that, still they gave these literacy tests, and they weren't to determine whether you could read or write. They were just there to really insult your integrity.
I had gone to school in Boston University School of Theology with Dr. King, who was there getting his doctorate, called us all on the phone personally and asked me to come down and assigned me at Vicksburg where do voter registration.
When I got ready to vote, the Voting Rights Act had already been passed and things were changing.
They had to break laws in order to make change. And if I know for that, for to really be able to create change on my in my community, I know that sometimes laws may have to be broken and you might have to go above and beyond and put yourself at risk in order to, for your people to get what they need.
50 years ago, there was an incredible amount of hope and belief that if we got together, we could really change things. We just knew that the segregation system of Mississippi couldn't survive if we just all stood together.
There are a lot of changes that are going to have to be made. And I think we can do that best by a coordinated work on civil organizations.
With our generation, there was a change. We were able to get jobs, and we got paid what I thought was just salaries. Now, they had ways of making sure they weren't equal. People who are out there looking for jobs today, in many cases, they do not get hired. In many cases, their qualifications may be twice that of their white counterparts or others, and still, they are not getting the jobs. As some young man told me a minute ago out in the hall from Jackson, Mississippi, he said, even though things have changed, they in some ways are much still the same.
I'm taking away that I, as a young female person of color, have a very loud and very strong voice, and I should never be afraid to use that.
We've just heard the voices of Gail Flock, Richard C. Williams, Abbas Khalid, Rosie M. Kirsch, and Kaya Burke, all participants of the 50th Anniversary Freedom Summer. Thank you for sharing your insight with us.
It was very powerful to hear all of these intergenerational perspectives coming together.
Now back to our music host, Alma Olavarría Gallegos.
Thank you, Nicole. Up next is a song by an emerging artist from New York, Samus. Her song, America, talks about the progress of the African-American community in the United States. Although she acknowledges how much progress has been made, she also talks about how much is still left to be changed. I love this song, and I am so happy to be able to share it with you. So let's give it up for Samus.
The best of times, it's the worst of times, and for the first time a lot of blacks first in line. We emerged though they told us we was too far behind. We reversed what they schooled us on by using our minds. Hey, we on the come up and we making moves to go out and get our 40 acres in a mule.
El Movimiento Chicano in the 1960s was a cultural and political movement geared towards reshaping a new identity, and it was mainly generated by youth.
Lucia Martinez had the opportunity to engage in deep and meaningful conversations with local community members on why Chicanismo is such an important aspect of so many people's lives and identities.
What follows are their stories.
My name's Rodrigo Rodriguez. I'm a community organizer with the Southwest Organizing Project in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I mostly work on food justice issues, kind of policy work, and also some of our mass-based political organizing, which has a lot to do with getting out the vote and voter registration.
My name is Mariana Anaya. I'm from the North Valley of Albuquerque. Let's see, I just finished up undergraduate work at UT Austin, went to a graduate program at UCLA for race and ethnic studies and education. Now I'm back home, and I am working as a campaign manager.
My name is Enrique Cardiel. I'm a longtime member of La Raza Unida Party. I'm a public health worker, parent, grandparent, husband. Play music, do different types of art, just try to be a positive part of my community.
My name is Jessica Helen Lopez. I'm currently the City of Albuquerque Poet Laureate. I was just named the Poet Laureate in April of 2014. I'm an educator. Recently, I taught a class for the University of New Mexico for the Chicano Studies Department, and that class was called Borderlands Poetics. What we did there was explore our in-betweenness as mestizas and mestizos, as pochas and pochos, as, you know, several generations removed from our mother country. and what it means to be Chicana or Chicano.
I am Chicano.
I am Chicana.
I'm Chicano. When I introduce myself, I'm Chicano Cahuila. That's the one part of my native heritage that I'm very clear on.
Chicano, I think it means a lot of things for a lot of different folks. Chicano for me has always been a piece of my political identity. You know, my like self-value and self-worth is kind of wrapped up in my heritage.
Chicana to me is a political identity, but it also has to do a lot with your past and really thinking about family. So to me, it doesn't necessarily have to do with what other people label me as, but as how I self-identify.
People have told me Chicano is taking a warrior stance, that by claiming that, you know, you're making a commitment to your people and consciously being a warrior. And I like that definition. I think that that fits for how I use it. Don't want to get all dramatic, but don't want people to take it, you know, too lightly either, that there's something to that.
Chicana means for me now is to continue sharing stories with other people of color, to create alliances, ally groups, to work within your community, to preserve culture and languages, art and song, our technologies, to remember our ancient histories. Chicana for me is an era, you know, that sprang from necessity and from a blending of cultures, and one that came with, you know, pride. And so to be a Chicana also means to be a feminist.
I was able, when I was young, to grow to a school that was really Chicano-centric. It was called Escuela Tlatelolco, and it was started by Corky Gonzalez and the Crusade for Justice in Denver in the 1960s. So going there in the early 2000s, like 2000 to 2003, I got to meet Corky and his family. So I was kind of politicized on the term Chicano really early on in my life. But grew up, you know, with my dad who identifies as Chicano and my mom that identifies as Chicana from northern New Mexico. But it was also helpful. My mom was at the time working at Chicano Studies at UNM while I was living in Denver. So at the time we were both kind of having this political awakening.
I went through a Mexican-American studies program at UT Austin. And actually, a lot of what I learned, it was through the program, but it was more through my friends. We started a group called La Colectiva Femenil. And then we wanted to encompass our queer family. And so we changed the name to La Colectiva O. So anyhow, it was really through that group that we all, you know, we were reading the same material in Mexican American studies and women and gender studies, but we felt that we weren't able to really dig deep enough in class because a lot of things were kind of at the surface, a little introductory, and we were having all these experiences at the university and we didn't really have a place to go and talk about them. So it was really through talking to my comadres that we really developed this identity kind of together. So that's really where it was born out of. That, and I think being away from home really gives you an appreciation for home. I also think it was the distance that made me want to ask questions of my family. And I remember talking to my mom, and my mom identifies as Chicana, which is interesting. She's like, yeah, I used to be in the Chicano group. And like later I realized that it was Mecha. And I was like, what? My mom was in Mecha. Don't even.
Well, I grew up calling myself Chicano, so like the whole defining it is funny to me in some way. I grew up in a neighborhood where we knew we were Chicanos, and that was normal, and so it wasn't much of a thought. Probably two conscious points in my life around using the term Chicano. One would be attending an all-white school, and so it was very clear. It's like, I'm Chicano, and that was it. I was lucky or fortunate or unfortunate, depending how you want to look at it, to have accidentally run across books about the Black Panthers and about the Brown Berets. And so I became much more conscious about colonization, you know, at an earlier age than a lot of people get to do that. And in a situation where I had to just suck all that knowledge up because here I was in an all-white school. So that was the first. The second was coming to New Mexico, and there were people who insisted I was Hispanic, even though I said, no, I'm not Chicano. And there's people very insistent on that. And, you know, there's that initial reaction of you resist somebody imposing things on you. But then the more I looked at things, the more it was, I realized how important it was to be Chicano.
As a young girl, I identified with Mexican-American. Born in Paramount, California, I lived in Long Beach, and that's what I heard around me. I didn't hear the words Hispanic, the labels, even Latina. I heard Mexican-American. It was a really easy transition for me to identify with Chicano. And that's because I have a bodacious mother and father who are very proud of their culture and their histories. And their roots. And Chicanisma came about through listening to my parents identify as Chicanas and Chicanos. And then the history of the movement came to be not in any classroom I was ever in, not through any textbooks I was ever reading as a young person, but through the stories that were passed along to me from my parents, my elders, like my aunties and my uncles. You know, for me, I was at a pivotal point when I started learning more about the Chicano movement in creating my identity and an identity that I could be proud of and an identity that I wouldn't allow to oppress me.
I think the term Hispanic is kind of like a generalizing whitewashing of the like identities of all of these complex folks that make up what they call Latinos, right? It's, you know, there's like Afro-Caribbean folks, there's folks from Mexico, Central America, South America, and then there's a whole kind of section of us that got left on this side of the border after the Mexican-American War. And so one of the campaigns we did at SWAP back in the 90s, I guess, was one of the taglines was, "We didn't cross the border crossed us." And I think that's where that kind of political identity of being a Chicano came from, was like searching for something to identify with that really spoke to your, to who you were, to your cultures, and the like kind of diverse cultures that make up this part of the world. You know, I know specifically in northern New Mexico, I have a lot of family who kind of really identifies with their like conquistador roots. And I think that's important too, to recognize that, you know, there is this mestizo culture that has kind of created truly unique people in parts of, you know, southern Colorado, northern New Mexico, and all over New Mexico.
Once again, I think a lot of it goes back to how other people label us or our families. So to me, Hispanic, right, was brought up by the census. I don't mind being called a Latina. I don't take offense to it, but I would rather be called a Chicana, or maybe even more specifically, a Burgueña. Chicana is, you know, a little more specific politically, but to me, I would really like to politicize the term Burgueña. I think it's also an issue of land. Like, when you know your land and where your family is from and, you know, the lands that your family has worked or, you know, has taken pride in, has built things with their hands on, I think that's also part of my identity as well. When you know the North Valley to the South Valley to the mountains to the volcanoes, you know you're a Burgueña.
Identifying, again, as Chicano is a form of resistance. It's a form of survival. It's a form of claiming what's ours. So there was never a government committee that formed and said, these people are Chicanos. But there was one that said, you know, we're going to lump everybody as Hispanics. Again, I think there's an attempt to disappear the differences, to disappear Chicanos. And so, again, that's part of the colonization process. Of, we chose the term Chicano. So now larger entities and institutions are going to impose other terms. You know, Chicanos from Texas are different from Chicanos in New Mexico, or different from Chicanos in California, are different from Chicanos in the Midwest, you know, but we all still have some connection, right? And so on some level, we can get away with lots of things because we're universal and specific at the same time. And I think that's really a beautiful thing.
So whenever you have to mark those little silly boxes when you get hired or you're taking a test, these standardized boxes, what gender are you? You know, what ethnic background do you claim? And there's never a box that says Chicana. And so when it says other, I write it in. Because sure, they want me to check off Hispanic. You know, and sometimes it'll say Latina, but that's not what I identify with. And so I write in Chicana. And I think it's really radical because when you say the word Chicana or Chicano, you know, I think that there are enough people to understand that this means that this is cultural pride. This is advocating for individual and collective rights. There's a long history of revolution against oppression and racism and poverty put upon people, and revolution and rebelliousness against the idea of being a victim. Really, I think it's also an invitation for discourse and for conversation. So, you know, that's why I wear that very proudly.
I like the music. Selena is still, I think, the love of my life. I like the food. I don't really generally eat anything without chile. And I'd say the people. You know, there's such a strong history of resistance and resilience in communities all across, you know, the border region, from Texas to California, New Mexico, Arizona, all the way up to Colorado. You know, there's just such a long history of kind of organizing and resistance and being strong and proud. And so I think that's really what I appreciate the most.
I love the self-confidence that I've had since calling myself a Chicana. I love that I can look at things with a more open mind, I feel. I love that I can kind of reconcile things with my family, especially being from a poor background, and knowing that you're a Chicana and knowing politically what that means, how you're placed in society. You can really go back to your family and say, wow, I've learned a lot of things, how to be resilient, how to, you know, pick up pieces where maybe if I wasn't identifying as a Chicana, I wouldn't appreciate the things that my family gave me.
I mean, I think I just love that I've been a Chicano my whole life. I appreciate people that figure out they're Chicano when they're in college and all of that. But I really just appreciate that I never had to go through that process. There's a privilege that I've just been Chicano my whole life. I love our music. I appreciate the artists that have been able to blend things that at one time can be looked at as like country and one time be looked at as urban and have that kind of continuation as opposed to either or. Which is probably like the third thing I love about being Chicano, right, is we can do whatever the hell we want. Because we're Chicanos, we don't fit in anywhere on some level, you know. It allows us a mental flexibility, a cultural flexibility. I don't know what's not to love about that.
My spirituality has also been something that has been able to be fluid as a Chicana. You know, so I've created ofrendas to the Virgen de Guadalupe as well as Frida Kahlo, you know, who I identify, I call my own saint, you know. And so whatever practice that we have, and there's some practicing, you know, spiritual persons in our family, but also the idea of healing. My great-grandmother was a curandera, and so that idea of helping one another and going through the healing process in the healing way has been passed down.
If you call yourself Chicana or Chicano, thank you. You do a service to your people by continuing to own that, you know, to be a warrior in that way is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful life.
Viva la raza.
We just heard a collection of stories about Chicano-Chicana identities told by Rodrigo Rodriguez, Ariana Anaya, Enrique Cardiel, and Jessica Helen Lopez. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
As a person, this was very insightful to me about Chicanaismo, because prior to this, I did not know how important it was to people who identify themselves in such a positive and empowering way.
I agree, Carson. And now back to our music host.
Up next is this amazing song called Yo Soy Chicano. It is the anthem for the Chicano movement about the pride that comes from identifying as Chicano. Here is Yo Soy Chicano by Los Alvarados.
It's about time to hear amazing upcoming events happening right here in our community. We will now hear from our calendar hosts, Pilar Monfiletto and Danny Kessner.
Hey guys, it's time for this week's fantastic edition of Community Calendar, brought to you by Generation Justice. I'm your calendar host, Pilar Monfiletto.
And I'm your other host, Danny Kessner. Pilar and I are going to be sharing some super fantastic community events with you guys tonight, so get ready.
Hey Danny, you're over the age of 18, right?
Yes, I am, Pilar. Why do you ask?
Are you registered to vote?
I sure am, thanks to two random girls who registered me on campus last semester. Shout out to you guys.
That's great. Then you should know that voting for elected officials and initiatives takes place on Tuesday, November 4th, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and early voting goes from October 18th to November 4th.
Of course I know that, Pilar. And for people who haven't registered, you have exactly 2 days left because registration ends October 7th.
There are so many things that people can vote for, someone could get really confused.
Don't worry, Pilar. The Congressional Candidate Debate is this Thursday, October 7th, from 7 to 8 p.m. It's a wonderful way to find out more about the candidates and decide who to vote for.
Where can I watch it? And who's running?
The candidates are the Democratic incumbent, Michelle Lujan Grisham, and Republican challenger, Michael Fries. You can catch it on the amazing New Mexico PBS.
Wow, there are so many ways to have a voice in the community. But as a 15-year-old, I don't know how to get involved.
Well, Pilar, lucky for you and other youth between the ages of 14 and 24, the New Mexico Youth Alliance is recruiting.
That's great, but can you tell me a little more?
Of course I can. The New Mexico Youth Alliance is made up of young people who are passionate about making change in the community. They focus on issues such as racism, teen dating violence, mental health awareness, youth suicide prevention, and so much more, Pilar.
Where can I learn more?
You can contact Adrian and Rosie at 505-821-3574, and all of your questions will be answered.
Hey Danny, roses are red, violets are blue. Community Calendar rocks, and so do you.
Wow, thanks, Pilar. But why in the world are you speaking in rhyme?
I thought I'd give poetry a try, since 516 Arts is presenting 516 Words, The Heart and Mind, a poetry slam.
Hold up, Pilar. Before we move on, I must know more.
Through storytelling, poetry, and musical theater, the program explores what we inherit and pass down, such as biases and health issues, as well as positives like the spirit of activism and the chains we ourselves have broken.
That was deep, Pilar. But when is it?
Thanks, I try. It's on Saturday, October 11th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at 516 Central Avenue Southwest.
Speaking of family events, have you heard of the annual Fiestas de Borelas?
I sure have, Danny. I heard that there was going to be great local foods, games, entertainment, dancing, a piñata, and so much more.
Yep, that's right. But do you remember when and where it is?
How could I forget such important information as that? It's on Saturday, October 11th from 12 to 5 p.m. at the Borelas Community Coalition on 1024 4th Street, Southwest, between Cromwell and Santa Fe.
Wow, you're so smart, Pilar. So do you have any idea what this month is?
It's National Hispanic Heritage Month.
Exactly, and the National Hispanic Cultural Center has events going on all month that explore the immigrant experience within New Mexico.
Yeah, so if you'd like to learn more about immigration, one of the events that is the showing of the film The Second Cooler, which explores the questions, who benefits from illegal immigration and its impact on the U.S.-Mexico border.
You forgot one thing, Pilar.
What's that?
Where and when is it?
Oh, right. It's on October 9th at 7 p.m. It will be at the Bank of America Theater at the National Hispanic Cultural Center.
To find out about all the Heritage Month events, visit their website at nationalhispaniccenter.org or call 505-246-2261. And with that, we come to the sad moment where we must end the calendar.
Aww. Well, there's always next time. Until then, I'm your calendar host, Pilar Monfiletto.
And I'm your other host, Danny Kessner. Now to our music host, Alma.
Up next, we have Cultura Fuerte. Cultura Fuerte is a local New Mexican band. Their song, Solo Los Fuertes, is about liberation and our search for freedom. I'd say it's one of the finest songs Borqueños have produced. Stay tuned and help support our local artist. Here it is.
We have reached the end of our show tonight. Thank you all for joining us.
We would like to thank Belinda Blair, Gail Flock, Richard C. Williams, Abbas Khalid, Rosie M. Kirsch, and Kaya Burke for sharing their experiences with us. A special thanks to Cecilia Frescas for conducting the interviews and sharing her story.
We would also like to thank Rodrigo Rodriguez, Mariana Anaya, Enrique Cardil, and Jessica Helen Lopez for sharing their stories with us. Special thanks to Lucia Martinez for taking the time to explore Chicano, Chicana identity, and including us on her journey.
A big shout out to our wonderful calendar hosts, Pilar Monfiletto and Danny Kessnar. Also, a big thank you to Alma Olavarria Gallegos, who was our music editor and engineer this evening, along with Camarina Umi.
Thank you to Chantel Trujillo for producing this week's show. Production assistants also include Roberto Rael and George Luna Pena. Also, a shout-out to Alden Bruce, Lucia Martinez, and Christina Rodriguez for editing.
Much appreciation to all our youth media makers here at Generation Justice. We wouldn't be the same without you.
Stay connected with us. Check out our website, generationjustice.org, where you can listen to all of our past shows, see music playlists, read our blogs, watch videos, and much, much more.
We are also active on social media, so please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and Instagram.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the McCune Foundation. And of course, all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking Donate. I'm your host, Carson Lafferty.
And I'm your other host, Nicole Beatty. We will end the show with a few more songs, then following us on KUNM is Spoken Word.
We'll see you next Sunday at 7 o'clock. Until then, keep it casual like cashmere, and here's Alma.
Hey, 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 thank you so much for listening to today's show. We have three amazing songs to wrap up. Up first is a song by Fabiana Rodriguez, an artist from Oakland. Her song, Caminaré, is about claiming and defending our land and our roots. After that, we will have Battle of the Broken Word by Toshi Regan. And last but not least is Linda Chicana by Los Alacranes.